Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are brought to you by a few people. We're going to get this out of the way real quick, but you do need to pay attention. If you want to diversify and you're one of the 60% of Americans that have a nest egg to protect, you really need to talk to the people at Noble Gold. They will diversify you. It's just not gold that they do. I went from client to customer, and after you talk to them, you'll find out why. There's no pressure whatsoever. They just give you options. And I've been a customer of theirs now for 4 years. They're the best people to deal with, best customer service. And I feel like I'm going to have a softer landing than most people because they've helped prepare me. Give them a let's not give them a call. Let's have them send you information. GoldBeforeLate.com. That's GoldBeforeLate.com. And also, too, we still have the storable food available. How much longer with diesel and what's happening with that? And what's happening with the supply chain and the food processing plants that have burned down and just on and on and on it goes. I think your shelf life for getting supplies is limited. And I'm not trying to make a sale here, folks. I'm just stating facts. And if you're still deficient in storable food, I'd recommend that you get started on this right now. You know the deal, 25-year shelf life, and you know the rest. You've heard me say it many times. If you want to know more and you want to take advantage of the sale, which I can't believe they're having, but they are, you can go to preparewithdave.com. That's preparewithdave.com. And if you're concerned about the grid, and I've become increasingly concerned about the grid, you'll be scavenging for your own water. You need water filtration. We recommend you have a unit for each person in your family for volume reasons. And there, too, is a great explanation. With limited supplies left, and that's not a sales pitch, folks. They've run out once. They found some in the supply chain. I'm the lone remaining vendor, and I'm telling you, it's limited. And you got to act now if you want the Alexa Pure Pro water filter. And all the details are there. They give you the research. They have kept prices the same. In fact, they too have a sale. Go to waterwithdave.com. That's waterwithdave.com. That's my public service announcement, folks, because I'm telling you, if you're not prepped, you're going to depend on a government that left 9,000 people behind enemy lines in Afghanistan. So make your choice. I hope you make a wise one. Welcome to the show. Our guest today is Patrick Wood. And we're going to be talking technocracy. Technocracy is what underlies what's happening to us. We have sock puppets in Washington doing what they're told by international forces that are the chief technocrats. Pat, welcome to the show, and did I describe that accurately?
I think you probably did. And let me just add something on gold. I have been following gold, as you know, for, oh gosh, decades and decades. And I want to just warn people not to get discouraged if gold does not go through the roof in this current economic environment. But having said that, gold and silver both are the only assets that will not ever go to zero. Not ever.
I hear
They're
you.
Tangible. You can hang on to them. You can hold them. People understand what they are. And regardless of what kind of, suppression, price suppression or manipulation we ever see in these metals, they will never go to zero. Lots of other things will, but not gold and silver.
Thank you. Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. And it's not just gold that Noble Gold does, though. They yep. do a whole range of diversification. And it's all designed to, do you want one chance to be right with your bank, or do you want four or five chances to be correct with them? And that's,
exactly.
I chose the four or five chances.
Yep. Got it.
But you've written some articles of recent that our shared audience, people that are familiar with both of us, sent to me. And they said, Dave, are you aware of this? And I said, no, it's the first time I've read it. Thank you for sending. But you're really tying the loose dots together very well. And you're doing it through the lens of technocracy. And we're all talking about the supply chain and the shortages that are artificially contrived and all the nonsense that we're going through. But I think really the baseline explanation belongs in the explanation that belongs, well, really, technocracy is really where it's at. And that's why I wanted to have you on to talk about this. So
yes.
How you see what's going on from the lens that you have really created. You're the father of the analysis of modern technocracy.
Yeah, it does appear that way, too. People are finally starting to get the picture, though, that that this is different, that it really is different this time. It's not directly comparable to communism, fascism, socialism, or any other ism. this is a kind of a new phenomenon. And the reason it's new is because it really is new. It's even though it started in the 1930s, the whole idea back then of these crazy technocrats that were at Columbia University was to basically to remove all of the government layer in society and just direct things from the top down. In other words, decide what resources would be used and what people would consume. And they believed that their system, their science, quote unquote, was so good that what's to discuss? You know, what do you need political systems for? To, you know, we the people sort of thing. You know, you don't need all that stuff. Just get rid of it. A bunch of buffoons anyway. We're the PhDs. We're the smart ones. We'll just tell you what to do, and you do it, and then everything will be good. That's just how Klaus Schwab can say by 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. A preposterous statement. And why anybody would even accept it, I don't know, but he's dead serious, which just shows you how big of an ego these people have.
Yes.
It's incredible.
Yeah, they hold us in such contempt. It's unbelievable. You know, back in the very early days when I first discovered your work through Trilaterals over Washington, and I first read it in 1979, 1980, I thought the arrogance of the Rockefeller family was really on full display in your book that you co-wrote with Anthony Sutton. But it's nothing compared to what we see now. What gives these demagogues the right to rule over us? And how do they gain control of our politicians where they're no more than sock puppets for their goals?
Well, actually, there's nothing that gives them high ground to claim ownership of the world. But the thing that's been creeping up on us for a long time is this whole business of scientism. And scientism is a religious proposition that worships science instead of God. It replaces God and puts science in that seat of being, you know, omniscient or whatever. And these technocrats around the world are elevating science up to a godhood. That's how they can say the science is settled or the science is immutable or the science can't be changed, that sort of thing. You look at people like Anthony Fauci, for instance. He's a classic example of this. He says, you can attack me, but you're not attacking me, really. You're attacking science.
Yes.
That's his God. So all around the world, even though they vehemently deny that they're, following scientism, they are. Because by definition, by the way, there were tons of books written in the last century. On scientism, like C.S. Lewis, for instance, wrote extensively about it. So did F.A. Hayek, for Pete's sake. But nobody goes and reads those books to know what they were talking about. But it's all been documented. It's in the literature. Scientism is an evil, twisted religious proposition. And that's what is driving these people today. That's why we have transhumanism today coming to the forefront. And that's why we have technocracy coming to the forefront as well. They're both bound by this concept that their science, not just science in general, but their science, which is, I believe, just pseudoscience, most of it, is so good that we don't need anything else. So they reject the Bible, they reject morality, they reject ethics, and anything else that would constrain them, or expand their view outside of just their narrow view of their scientific endeavors. They throw everything else out. All other systems of thought are out. That's why they're so rigid and inflexible. And that's why people like Al Gore can say the science is settled. That's also why he can say deniers deserve to be punished. It's just, you look at this whole thing and you say, well, of course that's what it is now. We can see it more clearly every day.
Do you really believe that they're going to punish the deniers any more than they already do with cancel culture?
Well, they already are, and even on a global basis. Now, let me put it this way. There's individual cancelship where somebody gets thrown off of Facebook or Twitter. And that's not good, of course, in itself. But then there's the societal punishment. Like, for instance, the energy market globally is upside down. This is a technocrat initiative that's been around for 80 years to destroy the traditional energy structure of the world to get control over all economic activity. Economic activity requires energy to make it work. If you wanted to burn down the economic system, which Klaus Schwab does, that's what the Great Reset is all about. That's what Build Back Better is all about. If you wanted to destroy the economic system, what better way than simply to remove energy from the economic system. It can't run. People can't get to work. Factories don't run. Air conditioners don't work, whatever. And the economic system just shuts down. That's what's happening right now. So there's a societal punishment going on. This is not deserved by the people. This is not ordered by the people. It's intentional. It's engineered. It's not just, oh, gee, we made a mistake and somehow everybody ran out of energy at the same time. No, not the way it is. This war on energy, and you'll remember this from the early 70s, I know, Dave. The energy crisis started back then. They tried to pull the same garbage back in 73 plus.
Yes.
I remember the gas lines. All of a sudden, Jimmy Carter said, oh, there's this horrible energy crisis and, we're being shut off from Saudi Arabia and all these, the other Mideast countries and whatever. And all of a sudden, there's lines around it. Well, it was so bad and so obvious, Tony Sutton wrote a book on it. It's called about the energy crisis. And it was. It was completely contrived. And they're doing the same thing today. And in the process, they're destroying the economic system.
What's behind destroying the system? Is it really to tear it down so they can build it back the way they want it?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Old-style globalization is dead. The old-style, quote-unquote, New World Order is dead. The new World Order is rising. As soon as, out of the ashes, it will rise. We said back in the 70s that the goal of the Trilateral Commission, which is the fountainhead of modern globalization today and all this technocracy stuff, we said back then that the whole plan was for them to grab resources. That's what Rockefeller was after. He was after grabbing the resources. And so when Brzezinski came into the picture and said and wrote his book Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, the age that they were currently in 1973 was that, that globalization era that they were trying to create. But he forecasted, hey, one day there's going to be that technotronic era. It's coming. What's going to be our role in that technotronic era? Everything was engineered after the Trilateral Commission started to grab resources all around the world directly, grab resources directly. Regardless of monetary system, David Rockefeller knew if you own the resources, it doesn't matter what kind of financial system you have on top of it, you're going to control all the people. And look at Billy Gates right now, still buying farmland like crazy. I just put an article up this morning, Farmer Bill continues to gobble up American farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, okay. What does he see coming? Food crisis. How long did he see it coming? For several years. I mean, he started buying up farmland about 10 years ago. Does that tell you something? Yes. He said, there's a big old food crisis coming. I'm going to take advantage of that. So now he's up to something like, maybe 300,000 acres of prime farmland in America. He'll gladly sell you potatoes now for probably $20 a piece when it really hits the fan, right? Make windfall profits.
It's amazing. It's so overwhelming. Let me ask you this. How do they control people like Cornyn, Biden, Pelosi, Schumer? How are these people? They're totally dedicated to this. I know Ocasio-Cortez's background. I know she's Bernie Sanders, developed through ex-campaign aides that auditioned for Congress people. But
yeah.
Aside from her, how are these people manipulated and controlled by these external forces?
That's a really good question. And my guess is in every case, there's going to be a little bit of different, techniques being used. But I would recollect, I would hearken back to Jeffrey Epstein. That may be a strange thing to bring up right now, but Epstein was a member of the Trilateral Commission, right? He was one of the core people in this globalist cabal. What was his function? I mean, he was a transhumanist. He believed that there was going to be, great transformation, maybe even escaping death and all that kind of stuff, and he put money into those things, different universities. But what was Epstein's real role in the Trilateral Commission? They only have like 320 members globally, and most of them are the most important people in the world, even now, that are pulling strings to, create this great reset. Well, Epstein was the enforcer. He was the blackmailer. He was the one that was getting all these people compromised where they didn't dare step out of line And, you know, I'm not going to revisit all the people that flew on the Lolita Express to, you know, his islands into New Mexico and stuff like that. The flight logs are there on the internet. You can go look and see who, you know, who flew on those airplanes because of the flight logs. But it was clear he was running a massive blackmail operation. That's just an example. That's not the only thing. I'm just saying that's an example of one way people are controlled. We get the goods on you. You do what we say and shut up, or we'll destroy you.
Is that from the old Franklin scandal written by Nick Bryant, where he claimed that people would be invited to parties, and even if they weren't guilty of nefarious actions, they were videotaped and framed in such a way that it would cast doubt, and as it were released to the public, it would ruin their reputations, so they would control them. Is that what you're referencing?
Well, I expect that could be the case, but you know, in the case of Jeffrey Epstein,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those people actually went to his island and they participated in orgies with underaged girls. Of course, the Little Black Book has never been released, and now poor old, you know, his right hand person. Ghislaine is now under death watch. they say she has a hit too, that somebody was being paid to hang her to death or something. Who knows? But none of the people that have been prosecuted, of course, that were identified with the flights and with, you know, activity in his circle. And you know, there's the people, the names of people that were associated have all vehemently denied they had anything to do with it, of course. You know, that's not true. That said, even Prince Edward said, you know, no, that can't possibly be true. But it was. And Epstein, you know, there's a mountain of evidence in proving that Epstein co-opted and blackmailed people with his activities. So I don't know that they need to necessarily fabricate evidence like that, quote unquote evidence, to trap people. Not when they're actually willing to go do despicable things and then get blackmailed for it. I mean, I think that happens all the time. It certainly doesn't surprise me.
Who's not on the list? I mean, is that the better question?
I know who's not on any list.
It just seems like it's so ubiquitous that you would have a easier time finding someone who is on the list as opposed to not on the list. And I just, it's amazing to me. I do know that Nick Bryant's work had some validity to it, but I think it is preempted in scale by Epstein's Island. I totally agree. What would happen to people that would refuse? No, I'm not going to your island. Do we have any anecdotes about that?
Yeah, sure. Those outliers, people who have a higher moral standard and just refuse to be compromised, those people, many of those people, have been compromised in other ways. Either they have been, voted out of their positions with dirty tricks, money given to their opponents and stuff to overwhelm them in elections. And a lot of people just kind of went out of the political process because they couldn't survive. And the political process protects its own. And they spit out the outliers. This is one reason, I think, that the establishment continues to hate Donald Trump with such a passion. Now, I aside from all the arguments on him, I'm not saying I like him or don't like him. That's not the point. The point is, why would the left today still be interested in crucifying Donald Trump? He's nothing to anybody, really, but they won't let it go. And they won't let, they won't let the January 6th thing go either. What's up with this? Why are these vendettas raging on? Well, they serve a lot of purposes to get rid of people that they don't like. And if somebody doesn't toe the line their way, they have a machine rolling that could chew them up and spit them out.
How are the ways that they do it besides Epstein's Island?
Well, how about take the case of Marjorie Greene, Congresswoman?
Okay.
What happened the other day? some people came into the congressional hall, tried to do vandalism to her door, intimidation, yes. clearly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a TV crew that came in. They got arrested. Oh, and then the fireworks began because it wasn't they say, oh, it's not an insurrection like January 6th. Oh, no, no, no.
Illegal entry into the Congress. How is it not?
I know.
Insurrection 2.0. Yeah, I know.
So they got all those people got arrested, and then they're immediately let loose on their own recognizance, and it's completely different behavior. Well, that is an attempt to directly intimidate somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I'm not saying I like her or not. That's not the point. But they don't like her. That's the thing. So they have the right, they figure, to intimidate her and say, look, you know, we're done with you. We're going to be violent towards you, so you better watch your back.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what they're gaining by doing this. I mean, they must view her as one heck of a threat. How is she a threat to them overall?
Well, I think it goes beyond just her. She is an example of other people that they don't like too. And I honestly don't think it's just her alone. She is certainly on the right wing of the right wing. She's been associated, I think, at least philosophically, with some of the QAnon stuff for some time. They don't like her, but she is representative of anybody else that leans to the conservative side. To the really, the really kind of right wing of the conservative side, and won't bend, and she won't bend. So when they attack her, they're also attacking anybody else that might be aligned with her in any way, and that's probably a lot of people, right? I mean, in Congress as well as out just everywhere in America.
So they're saying if we can do this to her, we can do this to you.
That's
no
right.
One's beyond our reach.
Well, that's exactly right. It's like, mm-hmm. It's like saying, we know where you live. you remember the school board issue where that lady up in Colorado got swatted by the FBI because
yes.
she was complaining to school boards up there that what they're doing was wrong and blah, blah, blah. And the Department of Justice got that letter from some NGO saying, these really are domestic terrorists. They need to be treated as such. And then the FBI shows up at her door. Well, was it just about that lady alone, or was it a message being sent all across America that, look, you go to those school board meetings and you get a little bit heated under the collar or whatever, you could be swatted too. It was a threat to the whole community, not just to one lady. And they knew that. That's why they made such a big deal out of it, to swat her in the middle of the night, to break down her door. I mean, gosh, can't you just ring the doorbell for Pete's sake? It's like, no, we got to break down the door. And you remember when some people in the FBI showed up, some people, SWATs, after the last election, they showed up with a TV crew. Gee, how convenient.
That was Roger Stone, yeah.
Yes, it was. They showed up with a TV crew.
Yeah.
And they drug them out in the street and in pajamas almost, his underwear. It's like, you can't make this stuff up. This is not just about one person when this happens. This sends a message to the whole country. You better toe the line or you're next.
Well, yeah. And the most egregious one, I think, is the Peter Navarro. Well, there's actually two of them. Yes. Peter Navarro arrested the D.C. airport. He was an advisor to the president, as such, he has executive privilege. He can't violate. He can't testify before the J6 commission because Trump owns the privilege.
Yes,
so
and they know that.
So he sued them to say, you cannot do this to me because I can't give up Trump's privilege.
Yes.
And so they arrest him, put a 72-year-old man in leg irons like he's going to fight him or run away.
Right.
And then they put him in jail, and they don't feed him or water him for 24 hours. They don't let him call his lawyer. They didn't notify a lawyer, which you're supposed to do, his lawyer, before mm-hmm. you arrest someone that's been a high government official.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't advise him of his rights.
Yep.
Pat, it's amazing. And then the case of... I forget his first name, but the last name, Clark, Assistant Attorney General under Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All he did was file an evidentiary preservation demand to the governor of Virginia regarding voter fraud. And whenever you're going to investigate something, that's standard practice. If you sued your neighbor, your lawyer would do an evidence preservation notice to who you were suing.
Yes.
And based on that, they come to his house and steal all his electronics.
This is
Gestapo tactics.
Well, it is, and this is a good example of the government being weaponized against the people of the country. And it has been weaponized. We've talked about this before. Virtually every agency right now in the administration has been weaponized against the people for their political agenda. This is another way, by the way, that people are controlled. And it's interesting that there are times when the loony left eat their own. It's not merely always conservatives that get chewed up, but at times they're willing to eat their own as well, and they will. But the bottom line is always, look, you do what we say or you're toast. You know, we will cancel you. And if we don't cancel you just to lose an election or whatever, what's the latest body count on people that know the Clintons? I don't know, but it's way up there. It's like, I don't know anybody that's ever been murdered. How come the Clintons know all these people that have been murdered and died and stuff over the years? It's a bad place to be. I wouldn't want to be their friend under any circumstances. Because that's just a short trip maybe to the morgue.
I was doing a joint presentation with Sheriff Mack last year up in Kingman, and he got up and he said, I'm one of the few people that took on the Clintons and lived to tell about it. Ha, 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 everyone laughs. And this lady who was helping to sponsor, she looks at me and she goes, you don't think that's funny, do you? And I said, it's not funny because it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, we digressed a little bit from technocracy.
Yeah, let's go back to
what's
technocracy.
Going on the global stage.
And, yeah.
The things that are happening right now are part of the takedown. And I think that Catherine Austin Fitz, in a recent interview, said it exactly correctly. She said, this is a takedown, not a turndown. And the takedown of the global economic system is preparing the way for the new world order that they're planning. That's the Great Reset. That's the post-capitalism era when resource management will be the big thing. And that means you are a resource, so you're going to be managed too. So the takedown right now to get rid of the old-style globalization and the old-style economic system, that's capitalism, free market economics, and anything, any kind of price-based economics, that is all going out the door. And the new system will be built on top of it, out of the ashes. That's exactly what's going on today.
Yeah.
So we see all the plates spinning. All the important plates are spinning at the same time. You've got energy, which is huge globally right now. It's huge. You've got the financial chaos is huge with central bank digital currencies coming like a freight train. You've got food crisis. All of a sudden, boom, it's just in your face. You've got the supply chain, which is critical to the economic system, breaking down all over the world. Even here in America on a micro basis, you say, well, the supply chain, that's ships and stuff, isn't it? Like airplanes between China and here. Yeah, but in America right now, our entire rail system is on a thread, hanging by a thread right now.
Because of diesel?
Because of diesel and just because of manipulation. Because, you know, the whole rail system, the people who own the rail system are part of that global cabal that's trying to, you know, that's setting up the economic system to fail. So now, you know, for instance, they've cut back on arbitrarily on fertilizer shipments to farmers and stuff like that. Well, is there no fertilizer to ship? Well, actually, there is. But they've decided, well, we just don't have a capacity. We just can't ship all the fertilizer we want to ship to you guys. So, sorry, you're just flat out of luck. And in the meantime, you know, they're at risk of going bankrupt again. It's like, well, okay, that, you know, whatever their excuse is, we're getting disrupted right here where we live as well, locally. So supply chains everywhere are breaking down.
And what role is technocracy playing in this?
Well, where they're going with this, look, they need to get control over all the economic resources of the world. And then they have to be able to set up a supply chain that will be able to deliver those economic resources in a way that they control. They control, not the people, not a price-based economic system. You remember Adam Smith? I'm sure you've read that book at some point.
Yes.
In time. But the concept of the so-called invisible hand, in economic affairs. You know, that the economies work together because there's an invisible hand that seems to just kind of keep things together, and it balances the price base, you know, supply and demand, all that kind of stuff. Well, that invisible hand is anathema to technocrats. They don't believe in the invisible hand. They want to have their hand controlling everything. So this is really kind of an existential, very basic discussion going on with these yahoos. They want to control everything. So out with the invisible hand, out with price-based economics and supply and demand, all that kind of stuff. They want to control it directly through their scientific, you know, method, as they say. You know, one, I'll tell you one way to look at it. This it may be a little bit oblique, but you remember back in World War II, when technocracy was at Columbia University, the other half of Hamilton Hall basement was occupied by IBM, the early iteration of IBM. And they were making the first Hollerith computer there. That Hollerith computer, tabulator, went to Germany to do statistical analysis and, you know, things like running train schedules and stuff like that all over the place, including to the gas chambers. But IBM was instrumental in backing up what Hitler did in Germany.
Yes.
That computing power.
With the punch cards, right?
Yes, with punch cards. That computing power enabled him to do all kinds of things, to control people, you see. It wasn't that people could make their own voluntary decisions on who would get on the train. No, IBM said, this is who's going to be on the train, and then they made sure that was the people who was on the train, right? It's like total control. The invisible hand is anathema to any technocrat because they claim that they need to be in control. They need to tell people what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to buy, what to consume, etc. Not just the people themselves. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Okay. I'm just kind of overwhelmed by this, but let's talk about the takedown of the system. You got the supply chain issues. You've got the, you know, fertilizer. In fact, let me ask you this question before I go down that road. I'm chasing the story right now that we're going to run out of diesel because of the lack of additives that are petroleum-based into the diesel, and we have 8 weeks' supply left. And I have not convinced myself that this is true. Do you know anything about this?
I do not. No more than you. I'm scratching my head, wondering if it's true as well.
Okay.
I've heard the claim. I have not seen the evidence, so I really don't know. But it would be very concerning if that were the case. And even if it weren't the case, $6 a gallon diesel right now is just a killer. That's enough to, you know, kill. And it's not going down. And it doesn't appear it's going to go down. And then you have to ask the question, well, why is the price of diesel and gas where it is right now? Well, if you look at, for instance, how many refineries there are left in America, there's been a blockage of creating new refineries in America. So the number has been dropping over the last 20 years to the point now where we barely have enough capacity, manufacturing capacity, to create the diesel and the gas that goes on the road as it is. So, you know, this is not, well, okay, you say, well, this is not... this is a structural thing. It isn't just a temporary supply and demand issue. It's a structural thing. It was the intentional destruction of capacity so that people would be, you know, would run out and prices would go up and there would be a sea change on how people, you know, consumed and transported goods. So now they're trying to get everybody to buy electric vehicles. Well, that's really convenient. What did that crowd have to do with the destruction of fossil fuel industry? Well, just about everything, in a way. You know, they'll sell more electronic vehicle or, you know, EV cars and trucks. And, you know, the old nasty old engines, gas engines, are just, they say, is going to go by the wayside. Cadillac, I think, just came out with a prediction that by, I think they said 2035, that they would be completely out of gasoline engines. You'd be completely transitioned over to EVs.
I think it'll be sooner than that, but yeah. Here's the problem. I'm sure you're aware of the EV prices. The average American, two-thirds of the Americans today are living paycheck to paycheck.
Yes.
Who's going to be able to afford to buy this?
Well, that's exactly right. Nobody. Well, somebody will. I mean, people are buying them right now that have money, apparently.
Some, not many.
That's right. So, you know, what it means is there's going to be a lot of people riding bicycles one day. It's going to look a little bit like China. You know, I say bicycles, mopeds, and motor scooters. It's going to make a big comeback in America.
Hence the exodus to the inner city for stack and pack, right?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, I have been paying attention, Pat.
Yes.
But here's where I was going with the original question. The technocrats want to control the grid. They want to profit from the grid, but they want to keep you in check with the grid. That's one of the objectives. But if they destroy the grid, they destroy the economy, don't they cut into their own profitability?
No. The technocrats are not driven by profitability. They're driven by control over resources. And profitability, you see, that's a concept of our price-based economic system, money. We have money. We say, well, what's profit? Well, profit is excess money. They're not driven by money. They're driven by resource control. There's a difference here. So as they accumulate resources, like Bill Gates buying up farmland, it doesn't matter what economic systems or what monetary system sits on top of those resources. They will dangle the people like puppets on a string. So it's about control. It's not just about money. Technocrats, even though they may accumulate a lot of money, like Elon Musk is supposedly the richest man in the world, they may accumulate money, but that is not primarily what drives a technocrat. A technocrat is driven by control, wants to control.
To me, I don't know how they get outside the profitability, though. I mean, I know what you're saying explains why major corporations are self-sabotaging because woke goes broke, like Netflix,
yeah.
Disney, and so forth.
Yeah.
This is in line with what you're talking about, isn't it?
It seems to be, because they don't seem to care about that. They're not as driven by profit as they were, say, 20 years ago. Or they wouldn't be doing these things. They'd be much more sensitive to keeping profitability.
But at some point, the viability of a business is maintained by profitability.
Well, it is. But, you know, I'll just say it. A lot of these companies are going to go out of business. They will. A lot of companies are going to go out of business, I think, in this next economic cycle.
This is some ultimate Kool-Aid drinking if they're willing to commit business suicide.
Yes. It really is. And the companies that will go out of business will turn over their economic activity to technocrats who simply will run them for their own scientific algorithms, whatever, to control economic distribution. I realize it's hard to get mind around it, but if you go back to the 1930s and during the Great Depression, when they thought that capitalism was dead, these technocrats that designed technocracies and the economic system said they wanted to have direct control over all economic resources and distribution of those products for the sake of the people. In other words, they would decide what the people needed, kind of like the cattle in the feedlot. You know, you decide what does it take to keep the cattle alive? Well, you got to have a certain amount of rations. You got to have a certain amount of molasses and this, that, and the other, and oats, and whatever. And you feed the cattle that ration, and they moo and they poo and they're happy. And This was the mentality of technocrats back then, that they would simply control the entire economic system, directly controlling people, with no political system whatsoever. They wanted to get. They called on Roosevelt, by the way, to simply, when he got seated as president, to declare himself dictator, and simply implement technocracy right on the spot. Fortunately, he said no. I'm not going to do that. But I have the book right here on my desk right now. It's called Roosevelt and Technocracy, written by a guy named, what's this guy's name? The guy's name is Henry A. Porter. It's a hardback book, and it says right in it that Roosevelt should declare himself dictator and dismiss Congress and all the other political machinations of our country and just do it directly. Now, if this mentality has not changed, Dave, and I contend it has not, this is the same philosophy that's working at the top. with these people, these technocrats, mm-hmm. trying to enforce technocracy on the whole planet. The people like Klaus Schwab.
I just, okay, let me continue trying to get my mind around this. I'm 90 degrees there. I have 270 degrees left to go. Why would anyone willingly sacrifice their business, like the NBA, down 50%, and a major reason is wokeness? Why would they be willing to sacrifice their own business for the good of something that they'll never derive a benefit from?
That's true. Maybe they're just not part of that that technocrat cabal in the first place.
But then they should be saying, to hell with you, I'm going to go for profitability and ignore your wokeness.
Yep, and maybe they're really part of the mass formation crowd that has been so demonized that they can't think outside the box, and they think this is the only way we can act. Maybe. I think there's going to be a massive number of companies go out of business this time around, and some of them are really going to surprise you. You remember in the past, General Motors, I think, has gone bankrupt at least once, that I can remember, maybe twice. But if they hit the fan again, if the major car makers hit the fan because they've decided to get rid of all, fossil fuel, gasoline, diesel, et cetera, some of them are going to fail. They're flat out going to go out of business.
Yeah.
And who's going to take over the slack? Well, people at the top will be glad to pick up the pieces of that.
Yeah, but there's got to be a carrot there. Not just a stick of, if you don't comply, this will happen. There's got to be a carrot for compliance, and that's what I'm missing. I don't doubt what you're saying, because I see the evidence of it.
Yep.
I see businesses self-destructing. The phrase, woke is broke, came from that observation.
Yeah, that's right.
But I just don't get how, put it this way, I don't think either one of us would commit business suicide to go along with something.
If you're forced to, you would.
And what's the mechanism of control then?
Well, you remember here in the Phoenix area during the lockdown, you remember the health club operator here in town had, 20 gyms around the
Mountain
city?
Mountainside Fitness, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the guy.
Yep.
He was forced into shutting down. And he said no. He tried to say no, and they muscled him. They browbeat him. They sued him. I don't know if the police came over and visited him too. But he was under tremendous duress. Because the political system and the technocrat system put the bite on them. Now that could happen to companies in a number of ways. For instance, ESG, that's the climate control philosophy put over on investments and stocks and how well your company's being run.
Is that the score that you get?
Yes, that's the score that you get.
Environmentally compliant you are. Yeah.
That's right. You get that score, and states also get an ESG score. That's coming from the major rating agencies now. So if a rating agency rates a company with a low ESG score, they lose access to funding. They can't get bank loans, or at least favorable bank loans. And the same thing with people. If you get a low ESG score, well, you're not playing ball. And so in the case of a larger corporation or state, if a state gets a low ESG score, they can't get funding. And, like loans and stuff to support their bonds and whatever. So this is muscle from the top that's forcing them to do stuff that they wouldn't want to do. But you could look at people first, just individuals, and say, do individuals do stupid things that are counterproductive to their existence? Oh, absolutely, they do. We see that all the time. People wearing two masks while they're driving their car down the street and it's 120 outside. Yeah, there are people that do crazy things. Can companies do crazy things too? I think so, because they're made up of people. And yes, they can. And once they've drunk the Kool-Aid, they're going to start doing a whole bunch of really stupid, stupid things. Did Disney have to go woke? Did they have to? No. But it's run by people who are. So, the people turned the company into a woke company. The people at the top, though, I have to say, the people at the top, the Klaus Schwab types, who are living the Great Reset, who have orchestrated the Great Reset, these are the same kind of people, Dave, that we saw on the Trilateral Commission. If you remember the book, How We Divided Up We called out the NGOs, we called out the politicians, we called out the legal firms, the big attorney firms, we called out the media companies aware, like Newsweek and Time and Wall Street Journal, and we divided it up into sections of professions, and it made a lot of sense. We said, oh, well, now I see what they're doing. Well, the same kind of professional division, we see that in the World Economic Forum, same type of people and organizations are joining the World Economic Forum. This is just a macrocosm of the Trilateral Commission. They're pulling the strings. They're creating the strategies, and then they pass them down through their lower minions, you know, through governments and through corporations and whatever.
Man, oh man, oh man, this is. Like I said, I guess you could be forced into bankruptcy sooner or later. To me, that's the choices they're giving these businesses.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Maybe there's a plan to absorb, you know, like through capitulation to becoming a subsidiary holding, so at least you'll save something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could be. And, you know, like take the banking industry. How many waves of consolidation have we seen in the last, say, 20 years? Well, there's been at least two. 2008, 2009, 2010 was huge. Savings and loans went out of business, and you know, smaller banks got gobbled up by bigger banks, and the bigger banks got really bigger. But now, with central bank digital currencies coming on the scene, this is going to change everything altogether, because now our Fed, at least, and I think some others are talking about this too, consumers will be able to maintain an account directly with the Fed. In other words, the Fed's going to become a bank where consumers can actually store their central bank digital currencies. Well, okay, so now the central bank could be in a position to compete with the entire banking industry, the entire banking industry. But we know the Fed's a private bank. It's not owned by the government. It's owned by private people. So if the Fed gets entry into making a complete monopoly over the monetary system, do you think they would dare exercise that and actually do it? Well, of course. They are, in a sense, they're already a monopoly. But if they get the right to hold consumer deposits directly for consumers, to give them like a credit card or a debit card or a checkbook or whatever, that means all of a sudden that the Treasury is completely out of the loop. That in other words, the Treasury will lose complete control of creating money, printing money. And it also means that Congress is completely out of the loop, because Congress, Senate, in particular, constitutionally, is responsible for weights and measures and currency. They will be out of the loop. They will have no power over the Fed if the Fed actually brings in this, you know, ability for consumers to maintain a deposit with the bank directly, or with the central bank directly. Well, you know, you look at stuff like this and you say, okay, this is headed towards monopoly control. All of it. The whole enchilada over monopoly control. That's what they've always wanted. That's what Bill Gates has always been. He's a monopolist. Rockefeller's a monopolist. The Carnegies were monopolists.
Right.
J.P. Morgan are monopolists. And the rest of the Rockefeller family, they are monopolists still. Klaus Schwab is a monopolist. He says by 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, okay, so if we go to a service economy where everything is rented, so who owns the stuff? Somebody has to own it, because it exists in time and space. Who owns that stuff? Well, they do. They own all the stuff, and they'll be happy to rent it to you. So this is a monopoly. It's a monopoly takeover of the entire planet run by technocrats. And the people are really nothing more than cattle in a feedlot to them. They're resources to be managed.
Well, I have a couple of questions that relate to what you're talking about here. One is Janet Yellen's concept of unrealized income, and it's been assisted by BlackRock and Vanguard that buy up homes at 20-50% over market. Yeah. So what they want to do is use a capital gains tax on appreciated income that you really receive no value from. You have to pay higher property tax. But if you can't pay it, you lose your home. Do you think that'll become a reality?
I see some pressure on that already. I really do. And even just the talk of that, scares a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to.
Me too.
And so that would spook a lot of people into selling their homes now, you know, before they get into a position where they got to pay a tax on it.
You just nailed it, because this is part of you will own nothing and love it.
It
is. Eliminate home ownership for most people, except for the
very wealthy. And you know, here in Phoenix, I know you know the market here in Phoenix, people moving to town right now cannot find a place to buy and hardly even a place to stay. Even though there are plenty of empty units around, they're not being offered for rental by these companies that are buying them up. And you see signs on street corners now, we'll pay cash for your house, we'll pay premium for your house, we'll let you stay there for 6 months if you want, rent free. Well, this is not homeowners out there. This is not people like you and me who say, I think I'll go buy a few houses. And, you know, these are the Black Rocks, estate streets, et cetera, of the world that have virtually unlimited cash building up in their coffers. And they're just throwing money at the residential real estate market. Some developments, by the way, a brand new development is being constructed out here in East Mesa, as an example. I forget how many hundreds of homes in this, but it's a huge development geographically. Well, I've heard from somebody on the inside of this that there are entire blocks of houses being bought up before they're even built by these big hedge funds. It's like, so they're never going to even see the light of day. They're just buying them up right up front.
Right.
Say, well, you're building 500 houses. We want 150 of them right now. We'll pay you this money. Well, what developer's going to turn them down? I said, well, heck yeah. You're going to give us millions and millions of dollars? Sure. You know, we'll build houses for you.
So that's the strategy to eliminate home ownership. The other thing I'm seeing, too, and I don't want to go to weather wars, but there's something that's going on with the climate, and it's going on in such a way it's affecting the grid.
Yes.
And like Hoover Dam, the turbines are almost fully exposed, which means they're going to have to shut down operation if this trend continues. And that means tens of millions of people are not going to be getting the power that they need. And they're already talking about roving blackouts. And right away, my mind went to you and technocracy. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about geoengineering over the years.
Sure.
It's still an issue today. It's not really a hot issue today. But the military, for instance, has been trying to figure out how to manipulate weather for the sake of warfare.
True.
For decades.
Probably, Air Force owning the weather 2025. Yeah, I published the documents. Yep.
Yeah, I think that concept goes back to even World War One. Seeding clouds and stuff.
Sure.
But they're still working on weather modification, because that's another thing of control. We'll never prove that for sure right now, because there's just not enough evidence. There's not enough whistleblowers that came out to say what's really going on. But, you know, for the drought that we have in Arizona and the West in general right now, you have to wonder how much has geoengineering potentially had to do with that. I really don't know the answer to that. But we do know the massive spraying of stuff in the skies in Arizona persisted for years. And we still see it occasionally. So you wonder, well, did that have any effect on, you know, modifying the weather patterns and, modifying the jet stream? I don't know. But somebody could probably do a study on it, come up with a little better explanation. But the drought now has the effect of reducing energy. That's my main point here. It has the effect of reducing energy, because if hydroelectric power goes out in Arizona, we're screwed. we're just going to be totally out of luck. It's an important source of energy for us. The only thing we got left is one nuclear reactor out here who sells a lot of its power, if not most of it, to California.
Right. Yeah, you're talking about Palo Verde, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And yeah, exactly right. I look at this, and I think there's nothing they won't do to bring us to our knees so they can gain total control. And that's the evisceration of our society. And you just mentioned it. We're screwed if the power goes down in the way that it's happening. You've got the stories about the diesel shortages. Forget the diesel shortage rumor. I did a poll with truckers that listened to me, and overwhelmingly they tell me when the gas reaches $8 a gallon for diesel, they're done. Their firms can't function. Independent contractors can't function. And $8 overwhelmingly was the median and the mode on my research. And so we're really close to that now. I think that's nation shut down too, because the stuff will stop shipping.
Yes. You're exactly right. And independent contractors will be the first to go, of course. That is companies who got 1 to 5 trucks. They'll be the first to go because they just don't have deep pockets. The larger firms that maybe have, like 100, 200, 300 trucks, whatever, 500 trucks, they might last a little bit longer because they can borrow money. The little guy can't.
You're exactly right. Pat, we're out of time. Tell us how we can follow your good work.
Well, I'd like people to go to technocracy.news, number one. That's, get on the mailing list. Buy my books on technocracy, for Pete's sake, and understand. I mean, dig into it. Find out what it's really all about so you can understand.
I agree.
You will not be able to protect yourself properly if you don't know what's going on, or fight back, and we need to fight back. The battle's not over. We need to fight back on this.
I totally agree.
But you can't fight an enemy you don't know.
They're going to stop running the chipmunks if we don't sign off, but I want to thank you for coming on, Pat. We're going to have you back on sooner rather than later because I felt we left a lot on the table, but very good information. Thanks so much for the work you do.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
Take care.